Senator Feinstein.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Attorney General.
Thank you.
On May 19th, Mr. Rosenstein, in a statement to the House of Representatives, essentially told them that he learned on May 8th that President Trump intended to remove Director Comey. When you wrote your letter on May 9, did you know that the president had already decided to fire Director Comey?
Senator Feinstein, I would say that I believe it's been made public that the president asked us our opinion. It was given, and he asked us to put that in writing. I don't know how much more he said about it than that, but I believe he has talked about it, and I would let his words speak for themselves.
Well, on May 11th, on NBC Nightly News, 2 days later, the president stated he was going to fire Comey regardless of the recommendation. So I'm puzzled about the recommendation because the decision had been made. So what was the need for you to write a recommendation?
Well, we were asked our opinion, and when we expressed it, which was consistent with the memorandum and letter we wrote, I felt comfortable, and I guess the Deputy Attorney General did too, in providing that information in writing.
So do you concur with the President that he was going to fire Comey regardless of recommendation because the problem was the Russian investigation?
Senator Feinstein, I guess I'll just have to let his words speak for himself. I'm not sure what was in his mind explicitly when we talked with him.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the president or anyone else?
Senator Feinstein, that would call for a communication between the Attorney General and the President, and I'm not able to comment on that.
You are not able to answer the question here whether you ever discussed that with him?
That's correct.
And how do you view that? Since you discussed his termination, why wouldn't you discuss the reasons?
Well, those were put in writing and sent to the president, and he made those public, so he made that public.
Not, so you'd had no verbal conversation with him about the firing of Mr. Comey?
I'm not able to discuss with you or confirm or deny the nature of private conversations that I may have had with the president on this subject or others. And I know that how this will be discussed, but that's the rules that has been long adhered to by the Department of Justice, as you know, Senator Feinstein.
You're a longtime colleague, but we heard Mr. Coates and we heard Admiral Rogers say essentially the same thing, when it was easy just to say if the answer was no, no.
Well, it would have been easy to say if it was yes, yes, but both would have been improper.
Okay. So how exactly were you involved in the termination of Director Comey? Because I am looking at your letter dated May 9, and you say the director of the FBI must be someone who follows faithfully the rules and principles, who sets the right example for our law enforcement officials. Therefore, I must recommend that you remove Director Comey and identify an experienced and qualified individual to lead the great men and women of the FBI. Do you really believe that this had to do with Director Comey's performance with the men and women of the FBI?
There was a clear view of mine and of Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, as he set out at some length in his memoranda, which I adopted and sent forward to the President, that we had problems there, and it was my best judgment that a fresh start at the FBI was the appropriate thing to do. And when asked, I said that to the president. It's something I had adhered to. Deputy Rosenstein's letter dealt with a number of things. When the Mr. Comey declined the Clinton prosecution, that was really a usurpation of the authority of the federal prosecutors in the Department of Justice. It was a stunning development. The FBI is the investigative team. They don't decide prosecution policies. And so that was a thunderous thing. He also commented at some length on the declination of the Clinton prosecution, which you should not normally, you shouldn't do. Policies have been historic. If you decline, you decline, and you don't talk about it. There were other things that had happened that indicated to me a lack of discipline, and it caused controversy on both sides of the aisle. And I had come to the conclusion that a fresh start was appropriate and did not mind putting that in writing.
My time is up. Thank you very much.
Senator Rubio.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Attorney General. I want to go back to February 14th and kind of close the loop on the details. Director Comey was here, provided great detail about that day. So what I've heard so far is there was a meeting in the Oval Office on the 14th. You recall being there along with him. At some point, the meeting concluded. The president, everyone got up to leave. The president asked Director Comey to stay behind, correct?
Well, that's a communication in the White House that I would not comment on.
All right.
Remember
seeing him stay behind?
Yes.
Okay. And his testimony was that you lingered. And his view of it was you lingered because you knew that you needed to stay. That was his characterization. Do you remember lingering? Do you remember feeling like you needed to stay?
I do recall being one of the last ones to leave.
You decide to be one of the last ones to leave?
I don't know how that occurred. We had finished a counterterrorism briefing. There, a number of people were there, and people were filtering out. I eventually left, and I do recall it. I think I was the last or one of the last two or three to leave.
Would it be fair to say that you felt like you needed to stay because it involved the FBI director?
Well, I don't know that how I would characterize that, Senator Rubio. I left. It didn't seem to me to be a major problem. I knew that Director Comey, longtime experience in the Department of Justice, could handle himself well.
So you saw him after that. He characterized it as he went up to you and said, you know, never leave me alone with the president again. It's not appropriate. And he said, this is his characterization, you just kind of shrugged like as if to say, what am I supposed to do about it?
Well, I think I described it more completely, correctly. He raised that issue with me, I believe, the next day. I think that was correct. And he expressed concern to me about that private conversation. And I agreed with him, essentially, that there are rules on private conversations with the president. But there's not a prohibition on a private discussion with the president, as I believe he's acknowledged six or more himself with President Obama and President Trump. So I didn't feel like that's the first. And he gave me no detail about what it was that he was concerned about. I didn't say I wouldn't be able to respond if he called me. He certainly knew that with regard that he could call his direct supervisor, which in the Department of Justice, the direct supervisor to the FBI is the deputy attorney general. He could have complained to the deputy or to me at any time if he felt pressured, but I had no doubt that he would not yield to any pressure.
Do you know if the president records conversations in the Oval Office or anywhere in the White House?
I do not.
Let me ask you this. If, in fact, any president was to record conversations in their official duties in the White House or the like, would there be an obligation to preserve those records?
I don't know, Senator Rubio. Probably so.
I want to go to the campaign for a moment. As I'm sure you're aware, as it's been widely reported, you know, Russian intelligence agencies often pose not simply as an official, but in covers as businessman, a journalist, and the like. At any point during the campaign, did you have an interaction with anyone who, in hindsight, you look back and say they were trying to influence me or gain insight that, in hindsight, you look at and wonder?
I don't believe in my conversations with the three times.
Not the general.
Well, I met a lot of people, a lot of foreign officials who wanted to argue their case for their country and to point out things that they thought were important for their countries.
But yes, never,
that's a normal thing, I guess, we talk about.
Right, but as far as someone who's not an official from another country, just a businessman or anyone walking down the street who kind of struck you as someone that was trying to find out what you were up to or what the campaign was up to, you never remember any sort of interaction that in hindsight appears suspicious?
Well, I'd have to rack my brain, but I don't recall it now.
My last question. You were on the foreign policy team. The platform, the Republican platform, was changed to not provide defensive weapons to Ukraine. Were you involved in that decision? Do you know how that change was made or who was involved in making that change?
I was not active in the platform committee, did not participate in that, and don't think I had any direct involvement.
Do you know who did, or do you have no recollection of a debate about that issue internally in the campaign?
I never watched the debate. If it occurred on the platform committee, I think it did. So I don't recall that, Senator Rubio. I'd have to think about that.
Senator Wyden.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for holding this hearing in the open, in full view of the American people where it belongs. I believe the American people have had it with stonewalling. Americans don't want to hear that answers to relevant questions are privileged and off-limits, or that they can't be provided in public, or that it would be, quote, inappropriate for witnesses to tell us what they know. We are talking about an attack on our democratic institutions, and stonewalling of any kind is unacceptable. And General Sessions has acknowledged that there is no legal basis for this stonewalling. So now to questions. Last Thursday, I asked former Director Comey about the FBI's interactions with you, General Sessions, prior to your stepping aside from the Russian investigation. Mr. Comey said that your continued engagement with the Russian investigation was, quote, problematic, and he, Mr. Comey, could not discuss it in public. Mr. Comey also said that FBI personnel had been calling for you to step aside from the investigation at least 2 weeks before you finally did so. Now, in your prepared statement, you stated you received only, quote, limited information necessary to inform your recusal decision. But given Director Comey's statement, we need to know what that was. Were you aware of any concerns at the FBI or elsewhere in government about your contacts with the Russians or any other matters relevant to whether you should step aside from the Russian investigation?
Senator Wyden, I am not stonewalling. I am following the historic policies of the Department of Justice. You don't walk into any hearing or committee meeting and reveal confidential communications with the President of the United States, who's entitled to receive confidential communications in your best judgment about a host of issues, and have to be accused of stonewalling for not answering them. So I would push back on that. Secondly, Mr. Comey, perhaps he didn't know, but I basically recused myself the first day I got into the office because I never accessed files. I never learned the names of investigators. I never met with them. I never asked for any documentation. The documentation, what little I received, was mostly already in the media and was presented by the senior ethics public responsibility, professional responsibility attorney in the department.
General,
and I made a honest and proper a decision to recuse myself, as I told Senator Feinstein and the members of the committee I would do when they confirmed me.
General Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? There are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it. And I've tried to give my best and truthful answers to any committee I've appeared before. And it's really people are suggesting through innuendo that I have been not honest about matters, and I've tried to be honest.
My time is short. You've made your point that you think Mr. Comey is engaging in innuendo. We're going to keep digging on this.
Well, Senator Wyden, he did not say that. He said
it was problematic, and I asked you what was problematic about it.
Some of that leaked out of the committee that he said in closed sessions.
Okay. One more question. I asked former FBI director whether your role in firing him violated your recusal, given that President Trump said he fired Comey because of the Russian investigation. Director Comey said this was a reasonable question. So I want to ask you just point blank, why did you sign the letter recommending the firing of Director Comey when it violated your recusal?
It did not violate my recusal. It did not violate my recusal. That would be the answer to that. And the letter that I signed represented my views that had been formulated for some time.
Mr. Chairman, just if I can finish, that answer, in my view, doesn't pass the smell test. The president tweeted repeatedly about his anger at investigations into his associates in Russia. The day before you wrote your letter, he tweeted that the collusion story was a total hoax and asked, when will this taxpayer-funded charade end? I don't think your answer passes the smell test.
Well, Senator Wyden, I think I should be allowed to briefly respond at least and would say the letter, the memorandum Deputy Rosenstein wrote and my letter that accompanied it represented my views of the situation.
I'll ask that on the second round. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Sessions, I want to clarify who did what with regard to the firing of Mr. Comey. First of all, let me ask you, when did you have your first conversation with Rod Rosenstein about Mr. Comey?
We talked about it before either one of us were confirmed. It was a topic of, you know, conversation about among people who'd served in the department a long time. They knew that what had happened that fall was pretty dramatically unusual. Many people felt it was very wrong. And so it was in that context that we discussed it. And we both found that we shared a common view that a fresh start would be appropriate.
And this was based on Mr. Comey's handling of the investigation involving Hillary Clinton, in which you said that he usurped the authority of prosecutors at the Department of Justice?
Yes, that was part of it. And the commenting on the investigation in ways that go beyond the proper policies. We need to restore Senator Collins, I think, the classic discipline in the department. My team, we've discussed this. There's been too much leaking and too much talking publicly about investigations. In the long run, the department historic rule that you remain mum about ongoing investigations is the better policy.
Now, subsequently, the president asked for you to put your views in writing. You've testified today. And I believe that you were right to recuse yourself from the ongoing Russian investigation. But then on May 9th, you wrote to the president recommending that Mr. Comey be dismissed. And obviously, this went back many months to the earlier conversations you had had with Mr. Rosenstein. But my question is, why do you believe that your recommendation to fire Director Comey was not inconsistent with your March 2nd recusal.
Thank you. The recusal involved one case involved in the Department of Justice and in the FBI. They conduct thousands of investigations. I'm the Attorney General of the United States. It's my responsibility to our Judiciary Committee and other committees to ensure that that department is run properly. I have to make difficult decisions, and I do not believe that it is a sound position to say that if you're recused for a single case involving any one of the great agencies like DEA or U.S. Marshals or ATF that are part of the Department of Justice, you can't make a decision about the leadership in that agency.
Now, if you had known that the president subsequently was going to go on TV and in an interview with Lester Holt of NBC would say that this Russian thing was the reason for his decision to dismiss the FBI director, would you have felt uncomfortable about the timing of the decision?
Well, I would just say this, Senator Collins. I don't think it's appropriate to deal with those kind of hypotheticals. I have to deal in actual issues, and I would respectfully not comment on that.
Well, let me ask you this. In retrospect, do you believe that it would have been better for you to have stayed out of the decision to fire Director Comey?
I think it's my responsibility. I mean, I was appointed to be Attorney General. Supervising all the federal agencies is my responsibility. Trying to get the very best people in those agencies at the top of them is my responsibility, and I think I had a duty to do so.
Now, Director Comey testified that he was not comfortable telling you about his one-on-one conversation with the president on February 14th because he believed that you would shortly recuse yourself from the Russian investigation, which you did. Yet Director Comey testified that he told no one else at the department outside of the senior leadership team at the FBI. Do you believe that the director had an obligation to bring the information about the president saying that he hoped he could let Michael Flynn go to someone else at the Department of Justice? There are an awful lot of lawyers at the Department of Justice, some 10,000 by last count.
I think the appropriate thing would have been for Director Comey to talk with the acting deputy attorney general, who is his direct supervisor. That was Dana Bente, who had 33 years in the Department of Justice and was even then still serving for 6 years and continues to serve as Attorney General appointed by President Obama. So he's a man of great integrity, and everybody knows it, a man of decency and judgment. If he had concerns, I think he should have raised it to Deputy Attorney General Bente, who would be the appropriate person in any case, really. But if he had any concern that I might be recusing myself, that would be a double reason for him to share it with Deputy Attorney General Bente.
Thank you.
Senator Heinrich.
Attorney General Sessions, has the President ever expressed his frustration to you regarding your decision to recuse yourself?
Senator Heinrich, I'm not able to share with this committee private communications.
Because you're invoking executive privilege.
I'm not able to invoke executive privilege. That's the President's prerogative.
Well, my understanding is that you took an oath, you raised your right hand here today, and you said that you would solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And now you're not answering questions. You're impeding this investigation. So my understanding of the legal standard is that you either answer the question, that's the best outcome. You say, this is classified, can't answer it here. I'll answer it in closed session. That's bucket number two. Bucket number three is to say, I'm invoking executive privilege. There is no appropriateness bucket. It is not a legal standard. Can you tell me what are these longstanding DOJ rules that protect conversations made in the executive without invoking executive privilege?
Senator, I'm protecting the president's constitutional right by not giving it away before he has a chance to
review it.
And secondly, I am telling the truth in answering your question in saying it's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice.
Are those policies written?
Even and to make sure the president has full opportunity to decide these issues.
Can you share those policies with us? Are they written down at the Department of Justice?
I believe they are. Certainly,
this is the appropriateness legal standard for not answering congressional inquiries.
It's the my judgment that it would be inappropriate for me to answer and reveal private conversations with the president when he has not had a full opportunity to review the questions and to make a decision on whether or not to approve such an answer. One, there are also other privileges that could be invoked. One of the things deals with the investigation of the special counsel.
We're not asking questions about that investigation. If I wanted to ask questions about that investigation, I'd ask those of Rod Rosenstein. I'm asking about your personal knowledge from this committee, which has a constitutional obligation to get to the bottom of this. There are two investigations here. There is a special counsel investigation. There is also a congressional investigation. And you are obstructing that congressional investigation by not answering these questions. And I think your silence, like the silence of Director Coates, like the silence of Admiral Rogers, speaks volumes.
I would say that I have consulted with senior career attorneys in the department.
I suspect
and they believe
you have.
This is consistent with my duties.
Senator Risch asked you a question about appropriateness. If you had known that there had been anything untoward with regard to Rush and the campaign, would you have headed for the exits? Your response was maybe. Why wasn't it a simple yes?
Well, there was a improper, illegal relationship in an effort to impede or influence this campaign, I absolutely would have departed.
I think that's a good answer. I'm not sure why it wasn't the answer in the first place.
I
find it strange
answer.
That neither you nor Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein brought up performance issues with Director Comey. And in fact, Deputy FBI Director McCabe has directly refuted any assertion that there were performance issues. This is troubling because it appears that the president decided to fire Director Comey because he was pursuing the Russia investigation and had asked you to come up with an excuse. When your assessment of Director Comey didn't hold up to public scrutiny, the president finally admitted that he had fired Director Comey because he was pursuing the Russia investigation, i.e. the Lester Holt interview. You've claimed that you did not break recusal when participating in Director Comey's firing, but it appears that his firing was directly related to Russia, not departmental mismanagement. How do you square those two things?
Well, you had a lot in that question. Let me say first, within a week or so, I believe May 3rd, Director Comey testified that he believed the handling of the Clinton declination was proper and appropriate, and he would do it again. I know that was a great concern to both of us because it did not, that represented something that I think most professionals in the Department of Justice would totally agree that the FBI investigative agency does not decide whether to prosecute or decline criminal cases. Pretty breathtaking usurpation of the responsibility of the Attorney General. So that's how we felt. That was sort of additional concern that we had heading the FBI, someone who boldly asserted the right to continue to make such decisions. That was one of the things we discussed. That was in the memorandum, I believe, and it was also a important factor for us.